I get older, losing my head. Many years from now, will you still be sending me a valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
This is Dr. Rob Stahl bringing you the only local call-in radio show exclusively for older adults and caregivers. What you should expect at your age. What should you expect at your age? A lot. And that's what we're here to explain. It's Monday, January 3rd, 2005. A new year, and welcome to today's show. Last month, we discussed cancer prevention and care with Dr. James Marshall of Roswell Park Cancer Institute and Ms. Gretchen Loeffler, Western New York Regional Director of the American Cancer Society. If you missed the show, you can hear it again from the show's website, whatshouldyouexpect.com. I'm happy to have with me today Mr. Charlie Ferguson, a member of the 1964 Championship Buffalo Bills, and Mr. Ray Hamill, a terrific physical therapist with Buffalo Rehab Group, to talk about sports and aging. We also have a student of Ray's here today, Scott, who is going to observe, and if he'd like to put in a few words, that's okay too. This is a phone-in, dial-in, phone-in show, and we'd love to have your calls. The phone-in number is 855-6848, and we're all here to answer your questions, including Scott. I came across the following quote recently. They don't live to exercise, they exercise to live. I wonder what my guests will have to say about that. Charlie, why don't we start with you? Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be a Buffalo Bill and what you think about that exercise quote?
Okay, Dr. Stahl. I think a lot of your quote, but let me tell you a little about myself. I actually started in Texas, Galveston, Texas, and with my high school career. And from there, I moved to Tennessee State in Nashville, Tennessee, and a very successful program there in sports, along with academics. And I was in school with a few Olympians, Wilma Rudolph, which is a good name, Ralph Boston, and a few other individuals who did quite well, the women track team.
Wow.
And from there, I went to the Cleveland Browns. At my first year, I had the experience of getting with the Browns at the time of 1961. And at that time, the Browns were considered the All-American team, like everybody is saying the Dallas Cowboys are the All-American team today. And had the opportunity of playing with two of the greats, Bobby Mitchell, Jim Brown, Ray Renfro, and just a number of excellent athletes and all pro guys there at the time.
And that's because you showed them everything you knew, right?
Well, they were tremendous help to me. I didn't know anything. You know, when you first go there, you really know a little. You think you know a lot, but you find out you don't know as much as you really think. And I had a year and a half in Cleveland. Then I was traded to the Minnesota Vikings, and I spent about a year and a half there. And then I came to Buffalo, and I had a seven-year career here. And I stayed here in Buffalo. I liked the area, liked the communities, the people. So that kind of helped me to stay in the area. And I was able to get a job at the time in Lockport, New York, Harrison Radiator. And I thought I had a very successful career with them and spent a total of 32 years with them. And I came out as a superintendent of manufacturing. And I was pretty pleased with the opportunities and the career that I had there. And now I'm back in the area of recovery from some of the old injuries that I experienced during my career.
Well, we were talking about that over coffee before the show, and we could go pretty much year by year, I think. And but we'll get into some of that.
Okay.
And what are you doing now?
Currently, right now, I'm on the board of directors with Meals on Wheels and St. Augustine Center, which is a family service type center. And currently, we have a project there. We're trying to work in the community in cutting down the violence with these teenagers and these gangs. And right now we are trying to get these guys together to eliminate a lot of the violence through training, which we have an extensive, very good training program that we think could really help us to enhance the problem. Jim Brown is experiencing this, of working with gangs and trying to correct the problems with them. And that's been a very good program that he has. He's in, located in 15 states today. So that's part of what I'm doing right now, spending quite a bit of time. And also the member of the Buffalo Bills alumni chapter. We have a chapter that is doing quite well in the community, making donations to fundraisers. And
making personal appearances. Right. I know you come out to Beechwood at the annual Beechwood picnic,
correct.
And
right.
I think that's where I first met
right.
you. And and people love you. You're gracious to the kids, the older people, and it's just great. This program that you're working on for the violence, does it involve sports as well?
Well, we're just getting started, and what we're really trying to do, work in the school system also, working with the jail, detention centers, corrective centers. We're really trying to spread this program because usually, as you know, a lot of the youngsters that go in jail, they come out and they still have problems, the same association, and dealing with the same problems every day. And Jim has had a lot of success in getting these guys, after his training program, on a positive track to really go a different route rather than being in that negative route and with the violence of killing and murder and things of that nature. So we're hoping that we can have an impact.
Well, I know I try to keep my kids out of trouble, and we keep them busy in sports and music and family trips, things like that. And I think the more you keep them busy, the more you keep them from hanging out on the corner and just trying to find out for themselves what they should be doing, the better things will work out for
That's
them.
That's true. One of the things that I have experienced in dealing with a lot of these youth, they don't have that type of situation, parental guidance, as two parents. They usually have a one parent, and it's usually
right.
the mother. And that has really hurt a lot of our youth today in the poor neighborhoods.
Ray, what can you tell us about yourself, and what do you think about the quote about living to exercise or exercising to live?
Well, my name is Ray Hamill. I'm a physical therapist at Buffalo Rehab Group in our Amherst office. And, you know, my life hasn't been going on for as long as Charlie's, so I don't have quite as many stories to tell. But
or mine, for that matter.
But he does serve as a good role model for all of us. Anyway, I'm Western New York, born and raised, born in Attica, New York. I'm one of eight children, so right from the beginning, I've been used to learning how to share and get along with everyone on a personal basis. I went with my parents to Tonawanda, New York, which is where they still reside, and my wife and I currently own a house in Tonawanda as well, and are raising two young kids. Anyway, I got into the field of physical therapy because I feel like it's a good way for me to help people and, you know, apply some knowledge that I've learned along the way. And it definitely keeps me related to athletics, which, you know, I don't plan on being able to participate in myself forever and ever, but I can help others to stay doing things that they like to do and just try to improve the quality of people's life in general.
Well, I want to take the first half of this show and kind of stick to football, and we can branch out from there a little bit. But I did a little research, and I came across a summary of different types of football injuries that can happen. Some of these I had never heard of. And from head to toe, this is what I came up with. Concussions, I'm sure everyone has heard of that, and knows that that's part and parcel of football. Spine injuries. Burners or stingers, and that was a new one for me. Fractures, a hip pointer, that was new for me. Torn cartilage and ligaments, sprains and strains, Achilles tendonitis, ankle sprains, and down to the toe, turf toe. And I want to ask Charlie, were injuries then as much a part of the game as they are now? And what happened to you on the field that you feel still affects you to this day?
First, I would like to say, because of the technology and the change and of the game, first, I played on natural turf. And being back east, as the weather changed, we developed, the field could be frozen, it could be very muddy, and those type of things that we experience. Today, the guys play on the AstroTurf, and which is very fast, and you got these guys now. A big guy was considered 275, 280. When I played today, I think that individual would be too small to play on the offensive line. Because those guys are everything over 300 pounds.
Yeah.
And we did not have all of the terminology that you just call, the turf toe and things of that nature. But we did experience some of the injuries. And the big thing I see today, Doctor, as medicine, technology continue to advance, recovery time is very important for professional athletes or any athlete. How quick can we get these guys? Ray is the guy that would really be working, giving these individuals treatment, rehabilitation, and things of that nature will actually help that individual to recover. Concussions were something that was not as common as it is today. The athletes, the quarterbacks, they take a lot of pounding and hitting their heads on that hard turf out there, the AstroTurf, you're bound to have a response of getting knocked out almost, don't know where you are, being dazed. But the helmets have improved tremendously from the time that I played till today's guys. Another term like turf toe, getting your foot caught in that AstroTurf, that has created that problem. The burns, we did not have that from natural turf. That's another because of the AstroTurf. And the AstroTurf is very hard. And you take some pounding on that, and it's extremely hard.
Also, you mentioned the players are bigger, too, so you have more weight coming at you.
They're much faster, the impact.
Do you think
Ray, he's not a big guy, he's a tall guy, but if he gets pounded on a few times, he's going to feel it out there.
Do you think the game itself is more pounding-oriented as opposed to finesse-oriented than it may have been 40 years ago?
I think it is because, as you know, being massive and being big, we have a tendency to try to use that on smaller people. The big guy is going to say, well, you got a little guy, better get out of my way before I hurt you. And I think it's a natural instinct of how people react because of their size. And sometimes you can look at these guys, they're very small guys, you say, how in the heck can they take it? But they have to be tough mentally and physically. And that's why conditioning, getting your body in top condition to be able to take the pounding over a period of time, then it's not as bad as it looks. But if you're not in condition and not ready for it, you're going to suffer.
Now, not everyone clearly is conditioning to be a professional athlete.
Correct.
But the principles of conditioning still can be applied, certainly, to any sports activity.
That's right.
Now, what injuries did you sustain during your playing years? And why don't you just describe your physique? How tall are you, and what was your playing weight? And so we have a basis for...
Today, I am 280 pounds, and I would say I'm about 60 pounds overweight from when I last played professional football. My height is 6'5". My playing weight at the time, I played around 215. I was very tall. But
that was a rail.
Also.
Yeah,
I was very thin.
That's what I run, and I'm 5'10".
I was like a racehorse. I was always on the move, you know, so I would burn it right off.
And your position was
a wide receiver.
A wide receiver.
Believe it or not, you look at me now, you say you had to play defensive
Yeah,
time.
You were a big wide receiver for the day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, during the days of the 60s when I played, it was nothing to see rangy, tall receivers. And then the game changed, then they started going with the smaller guys.
The faster guys.
And trying to get much faster. You know, they might be a little faster, but also quickness is so important in professional football. And I think that is the difference in the game of college, professional. The game of professional football is extremely fast and it's very quick. It's amazing how these big guys can move out there.
Right.
And if you just get close to the field and just see what's going on, you'd be impressed to just see how these guys can move. And I think that's what the big difference is. It just moves so fast and things happen immediately.
Did you ever play George Plimpton when he was alive and playing with the Detroit Lions?
No, I remember when George was doing all his things and all the experiences that he was going through. But it was an experience of it's amazing to me how medicine has just continued to improve and patch up these guys and get them right back out there at the surgery. During my era, I mean, they give you a long cut on your knee for ligament problems, and you were just about through for that season. But now, you know, unless you had some cartilage problems, they could get you back in about 6 weeks or a month. But today, with the arthroscopic type surgery,
right,
they don't have to go
like
for
that.
The long cut. They give a put a couple of holes in your knee.
And they go poking then, around with a scope.
Right.
And
in 4 weeks, you're back out there in tip-top shape.
I had a little piece of cartilage taken out of my joint, and it's amazing what a tiny little piece of something in
That's
there
true.
Can make you miserable,
right.
Let alone a professional football injury.
Sure.
So what injuries did you have when you were playing?
What I had during my era, college, I was very lucky. If I can go back there, I had a lot of pounding on my knees because I was going both ways, defense and offense.
Hmm.
And then backs trying to block on me when I was on defense. I always had a lot of fluid on my knees.
Hmm.
But I did not have any tear, ligaments or cartilage during the time that I did play. Experiencing injuries in professional football, the first injury that I experienced was my third year. And that really did not come from the game of football itself. It was an off season in Cleveland playing basketball,
mm-hmm.
and I went up for a rebound and fell on a guy's ankle and twist my ankle.
Yeah.
And then I developed calcium deposit on my ankle, and I went to camp that year, and I had like a pinching sensation at times. And it was always like something was pinching me. And after I had, some people may remember Dr. Goffrey, who was one of the leading arthroscopic surgeons around here, and he was the Bills physician at that time. So he had to go in, what he said, he had to scrape my bones in order to clear that up. And, you know, right after that, I had no problems with that. But I didn't know that Dr. Goffrey had told me later, he said, I had given up on you. I didn't think you could recover.
He told the trainer, right?
Right.
He didn't tell you.
They told me later. They didn't tell me at the time.
They just threw you back on the football field. And
right. I really worked hard
right.
to come back. Because at that time, you didn't want to stay out any longevity or any time that could really hurt you.
Then you'd get a reputation. And,
well,
they wouldn't
and
play
also,
you.
They would bring guys in very quick to replace you
right.
in case you did not.
And then you really had to prove yourself
right.
to get
so
back out there.
You didn't want to stay out too long. The old saying used to be, you can't make the club being in the tub all the time. So that was always a good saying. After that, I did recover from that. Then I had some shoulder problems, but no surgery. And I had my other ankle where I think the terminology for the bones are your fibula. And it was kind of twisted in the radius where my foot was going one way.
Mm.
And Dr. Garfield had to go in and he said, put C-clamps and everything to straighten my foot up. And that kept me out for about 6 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And I, but those were the two major injuries.
You were
I
lucky
had.
Then. You were
yeah,
very lucky.
I was.
And one wasn't even a football injury.
That's true. And then recently, 2 years ago, probably from the pounding that I had been taking during my college years on my knees, I had a very, very bad morning one morning. I woke up, severe pain. And I was just really concerned. How in the heck did I hurt that? But I couldn't recall where it had a recent fall, something from playing golf or anything of that nature that really created this type of problem for me. But after going to the doctor, to an orthopedic doctor, he said that it's something that you may not feel it first few years or whichever, but it's something that can come back on you, which like mine did after about 30 years later. And I had the arthroscopic surgery, had a collateral tear in the ligament, and I feel good now, but I think if I'd have known Ray then, I would have rehabbed a lot better before that.
Well, Ray's helped me. That's why I asked him to be on the show, because he takes a very thoughtful, logical approach to therapy, and I think he really helps people by teaching, like Scott's here to learn, and he teaches his patients, goes at the pace that people are able to do, and explains things so that people understand why they should be doing what he recommends.
And it's very important, just kind of go back, I think I mentioned to you guys earlier, I had gone to the doctor today because the injury is still giving me some problem. And I say that because rehabbing is very important. If you have to do it, do it. Be patient and do it and work at it. And it would really help in a long run. And I think I shortchanged myself by not doing the rehab that I should have done. I felt so good after. I didn't think it was necessary.
Well, we talked about how that's somewhat like high blood pressure. If people feel good, they don't understand why they need to be taking their medication.
Correct.
Or if they take an antibiotic and they're supposed to take it for 7 days or 10 days, and they feel better after 3 days, they stop it, and then the problem comes back. So, Ray, what do you see in the office as far as injuries that occurred earlier in life and that people have to deal with now when they're older?
Yeah, I think that frequently what I hear is from people, they're telling me about their current pain issues, and then lo and behold, you start talking to them a little bit more, and these old injuries start coming up in their history. And, you know, because of the time that's lapsed, people don't always link the two. But more often than not, there is a biomechanical circumstance that has come up that maybe has led from the original injury to the newer injury. And it can be something as simple as an ankle sprain that maybe feels better. You feel like you've got your full motion back, but there's small idiosyncratic things that change with your movement that can affect your knee, hip, lower back, etc.
Well, Charlie mentioned the calcium deposits in his ankle that had developed. Do you see things like that now are causing people problems?
Yeah, there's a lot of those types of things that, as a physical therapist, we don't necessarily see, only because we don't order and assess diagnostic imaging such as X-rays and MRIs. But I think that we hear more about the pain complaints from people and see how it changes how they move.
So. And certainly with arthritis developing potentially as people get older and with a pre-existing problem, that's going to make the arthritis seem even worse.
Yeah, definitely. I hear from patients all the time, and they'll say that they just don't understand because their right knee hurts, but the doctor told them that their left knee looked much worse on the X-ray. Now, you kind of have to reconcile that and kind of ask yourself, why is that happening? And there's more to the story than just the degenerative change. It's also the quality of movement and what you want to try to do with that leg. So,
and that goes along with the story I like to tell about older patients in general, that you have pain, and you might attribute it to aging, but you have pain on one side and not the other, but both joints are the same age. So you can't just attribute it to age. And we're talking about different possibilities. Old injuries, be it sports injuries or traumatic injuries, if someone was in a car accident years ago, and now later in life, it's raising its ugly head, and you have to deal with it. What other types of things? Now, I know in training, I also happened to meet a former Buffalo Bill 20 years ago in my training, and his knees were shot. Mm-hmm. And I imagine knees are a big joint that's affected, especially in professional sports, be it football, basketball, I would imagine, as well. But what can you tell us about knees and what you see in older people as far as what's happened to their knees over the years, above and beyond just arthritic changes?
There is occasionally range of motion loss, and if you can sense range of motion loss, then most definitely that goes along with arthritic change. your knee should definitely be able to straighten out completely. If it cannot, it's going to affect your gait. You'll walk with a noticeable limp and those types of things. Other common changes in knees, maybe a telltale sign that something is amiss, is just something as simple as difficulty with ascending or descending stairs, squatting, and kneeling. You know, those are telltale signs that something is not quite right in the knee.
So let's just stop right there. A normal older adult who does not have old injuries, that does not have arthritis changes, should be able to do all those things, should be able to straighten their leg out. So if someone finds one day that they're not able to straighten their leg out or they have pain, they shouldn't just say, well, it goes with aging.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, that's, in most cases, that's a very correctable thing. And in the very short term as well. You know, it's maybe a matter of weeks of just being on the right stretching program.
So stretching, what are the techniques to help something like that?
Yeah.
Saying it's very straightforward, and
right.
Probably a lot of people give up on themselves on something that simple, and that
right.
leads to other problems.
A professionally managed exercise program that would be prescribed by a physical therapist would typically include some stretching exercises, along with some type of conditioning exercise, which could oftentimes be melded right into a cardiovascular training program, such as swimming or cycling or something along those lines. You know, basically, most times we suit people's programs to suit their fancies. And, you know, we come right out at the beginning and ask people what they would like to do and what they enjoy doing. And, you know, we try to tailor the programs to their needs.
In the second half, I want to get into some simple things that people can do at home. We just talked about people living to exercise. Most people don't really enjoy exercising, but there are ways, sports is a way to exercise that might be enjoyable. But
can I just say something?
Yeah.
Kind of go back to what your question was to Ray. Some of the things that I see today, as far as professional athletes, the older guys, and you probably experienced both of you, see it now, they are replacing knees now. That's one of the things, because guys get their cartilage so bad, and that bone-to-bone contact is definitely not good, and then they have to go in and replace the knee. A lot of guys are doing that now. I see more and more of that. And they experience no problems once they do that, no pain or none of that. The other thing, replacing hips. A lot of professional athletes are replacing the hips because the experience that they have experienced with pain, it eliminates that problem. So a lot of replacement of the bones and the joints are becoming a big thing now.
Well, I'm glad that's very important to bring up. You know, that being older, even 85,
right.
I have a patient of mine that was an avid skier, and his hip problems were holding him
mm-hmm.
back.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted my advice, and he went to an orthopedic doctor, and he went through a hip replacement surgery, and he did great.
Right.
And he's back to skiing.
Oh,
so
right.
So there's no specific age
right.
where after
right.
that age someone can't have a particular surgery. If they're otherwise healthy and can tolerate the surgery, have been doing that activity successfully to relieve pain and to increase function.
Right.
Are the keys here. No one wants to suffer pain, and to take medications can help, but it can also cause more problems.
Right.
So I'm glad you brought that up, and even patients into their mid-80s and even older. We were talking about someone, 93, surgeon.
Yeah, that Dr. Godfrey.
Well, he was still exercising himself by doing this kind of surgery, Dr.
Mm-hmm.
Godfrey, at 93 years old. Well, why don't we take a break, and then we'll get into different types of activities that older people tend to like to do and should be encouraged to do, and guys like Ray can help them to do it successfully, and I think Charlie's an example Charlie, I didn't ask how old you were, but you look pretty youthful to me. You, 39 plus.
Still moving.
39 plus, but he's staying very active, right. And he looks into all the opportunities for himself to stay as active as possible.
Yeah.
So we'll take a quick break, play a song, and come right back.
Now my favorite TV anchor man says, watch the Middle East. The price of oil is going out of sight. And only yesterday, he said the price would never be increased. And that's the opposite of what he said last night. Now, it's getting so tough to understand this stuff. I don't really want to bother anymore. By the time I understand the news that I read today, I gotta forget the news I read the day before. But then I turn to the sports page, and I see where the Lakers didn't make it. Now there's no way I know they can fake it. They can't say they win if they lose, 'cause there it is on the sports page. No way I know to deny it. They win, they lose, or they tie it. They can't cover it up in the news. Now, generals, congressmen, and other shifty guys, they all got little tricks they want to pull. And this scratchy stuff I feel that's being pulled around my eyes, I'm beginning to identify as wool. There's an expose about the CIA on the radio and TV and the press. And after all the different versions of what I'm supposed to know, I wind up understanding even less. But then I turn to the sports page, and I see where Reggie Jackson made an error. How could they report that any fairer? The sun must have got in his eyes, 'cause there it was on the sports page. Just the simple facts that I am finding, not another axe somebody's grinding. They can't change the score by telling lies. There it was on the sports page. Only page that takes a firm position. Kind of like an honest politician. The kind you hardly find anymore. In fact, let's face it, the sports page is the only place to go when a fella wants to know the score.
This is Dr. Rob Stahl, and we're back now with What You Should Expect at Your Age. That was a cute song, a lot of truth to it. If you'd like to call and ask me, Mr. Charlie Ferguson, the retired Buffalo Bill, that's staying active, and he looks real happy and productive and doing volunteer work, certainly a model for people to follow, or Ray Hamill of Buffalo Rehab, on Sports and Aging. The phone number again is 855-6848. I want to spend this half of the show talking about the common injuries that occur when older people play sports, and I want to also add to sports playing musical instruments, and two in particular, piano and violin, are two instruments that Ray has had experience with people developing problems, and how best to prevent them. Now, our station engineer, Mr. Jimmy, he wanted to tell us a little bit about his ankle injury and his organ playing, and how that's affecting him.
Unfortunately, I received an injury on the job, and I slipped on some ice and slipped up against my car and broke my left ankle in three places. So I have two little pins that hold the small bones together. I had a big pin going through the big bone, but they took it out because I was determined to rehab myself because I play the organ for the church, and I didn't want to lose that ministry. So God was blessed. He blessed me to you know, recover, but you do, it takes determination. You got to want to do it, you know, suffer the pain. Then I found out about MSN, which is it's a sulfur substance, and it's good. It's naturally occurring in the body, but you can get extra to help out those injuries. And I've been kind of pain-free because of MSN and my just sheer determination to try to overcome the injury.
Well, and as far as your hands, are they holding up playing?
My hands are holding up pretty good, too.
Playing the organ?
Yeah. I had several sprains from playing just pick up basketball and football, you know, but I've been able to keep that basically because it's just staying active. I think your activity has a lot of importance. So the more you stay active, the more, you know, I think you have a better chance of recovering. You know?
Now, Ray, what's your experience with people playing piano and hand injuries, ankle, foot problems using pedals?
Yeah, well, you know, ironically enough, the piano players that I've worked with in the past, it's usually more of an issue with maintenance of posture more than actually operating their hands or feet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you think about what you're doing, you're sitting on a bench usually without any back support for an extended period of time. And if your posture lends itself to it anyhow, or if you may just not be strong enough through your trunk to support your body weight for that period of time, then you can break down that way.
Well, what about how does osteoporosis and the development of curvature of the spine in women, how might that affect things? And that certainly that brings up the issue of taking calcium, vitamin D, or other medications to help prevent that bone loss for women.
Yeah, I think a lot of things... you can almost see how they lend themselves into that forward bent posture. You know, you may hear of it called the thoracic kyphosis, the curvature forward in the thoracic spine.
Or the Dowager's hump.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, you kind of have to, it's difficult yourself, but sometimes you have to be able to step back and almost look at the posture that you're using as you're playing the piano or playing an instrument and just try to make sure that you're in a most ideal ergonomic position.
All right, Jimmy.
So
well,
you promote a back straight as opposed to hunching over, which a lot of pianists do. We do that sometimes, you know. And then I even catch myself hunching over a little bit. I'll straighten myself. I'll force myself backwards.
Yeah.
I have a straight spine.
So let's say not quite as straight as Liberace, but
okay,
heading in that direction.
Okay.
Well, that would mean you should really have an adjustable bench or seat that can go up or down and certainly be able to move closer or further away from the piano.
That's right. That makes the most sense. Okay. As opposed to a rigid bench.
Now, you mentioned, Jimmy. Now, Ray, you also mentioned violin, that violin players develop neck problems. And why don't you tell us a little bit about that and what could be done about it?
Yeah, I'd say with any type of with the violin specifically because of the chin rest, or with a woodwind where it's important that your head be cocked one way or the other to play the instrument properly, you set up a situation where an imbalance can occur in the postural muscles of the neck or trunk.
So what should current violin players do?
What we've recommended in the past for those types of complaints is really just a good comprehensive stretching program and a strengthening program to try to offset the postural imbalance that's created by their recreational activity instrument playing.
And then people generally, if they have this imbalance, they'd have neck pain or perhaps upper back pain as well.
Yeah, that would be the typical complaint, or perhaps a secondary pinched nerve down the arm because of the neck problem. Those are the types of things that I've run into.
All right, now let's get into some sports. And I know, Charlie, you play golf. Why don't we start with your experiences playing golf and maybe what your routine is before you get out and play to help limber up and to prevent injuries and what problems you've had playing the game.
You know, that's a very good question, Doctor. One of the things that I've experienced is that if you do not warm up properly with golf, you can develop some type of injury. It's important to stretch a lot also. And then I try to get out a few minutes early ahead of my tee time to try to be able to stretch. And as I get older it requires more and more stretching and more time of warming up to get your body warm, to be able to swing and stretch a lot.
How do you know when you're ready to go?
Well, I think the way you feel. Your body warms up. When you can warm up in your body, you feel good. I think you know that when you're ready. You know your body. And that's the way I feel, that when I'm warm, I don't want to overexert myself by warming up too much, and then I go out there and hit all bad balls.
Right. All your good shots were during the warm-up, right? You know? Yeah, I've had that experience, too.
But that's what I try to do, and I learned that from sports also, how important it is to stretch your legs and things. And I used to try to walk every day or as much as I possibly can. And because of some of the injuries that I've had now, you see me running for the cart more and less walking.
Uh-huh.
But that's what I try to do, get a heavier club, maybe put a weight on the end of the club, swing that, try to turn my body more exaggerating and things of that nature to be able to really feel good when you do play the game.
Ray, what's your experience with golfers, older golfers?
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing is people age is that they tend to lose mobility.
Right.
And when you look at golf, it's such a large movement, and it really takes almost every segment of your body to its maximum range of motion. So if there's any flaw in that system, it's sure going to be brought out with a golf swing.
Right.
So kind of like what Charlie was saying there, the more limbered up you can be, the more range of motion you're going to offer your body, and you're much less likely to run into that buttress at any one segment, which is that banging into that end range of motion is typically where an injury would occur. So that's the importance of the warm-up.
Now, I golf and occasionally, and what would be, besides swinging the club and kind of working your way towards more variation in the swing, more degrees of swing, are there general exercises that people can do on a daily basis to stay in shape for golf?
Yeah, the way that I explain it to my patients usually is that if you want to do an activity that requires a tremendous amount of rotation, you better be flexible in the parts of your body that are built to rotate. So if you kind of start from the bottom and work your way up, you start looking at your foot and ankle, your hips, your thorax, where your rib cage is, and your neck and shoulders. So those are really key areas. And if I was going to examine somebody for a golf readiness program, those are the key areas that I would look for.
So it's the rotation action that's key.
That's right.
That's the key to a good golf swing, of course,
that's
is
right.
Good rotation.
Everybody knows how Tiger Woods, you know, the key to his success is his ability to rotate.
So would they start from the top of their head and just turn their head side to side, and then the shoulders side to side, try and point your left shoulder over to where the right shoulder is?
Somewhat. It's interesting that you mentioned the head motion, because what we actually do is try to almost keep people's heads still and try to move the rest of their body around the still head, because if you're going to hit the ball successfully, you know, with good repeatability,
sure,
you need to be able to keep your eye on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people lose the ability to get a full shoulder turn and still see the ball. So, you know, that's really a key area where we try to create more motion.
So that could also be a clue to when you're losing mobility, if you find that you just can't keep your head down on the ball. And
definitely.
It keeps pulling up no matter how hard you try.
Right. You'll feel like you can't take a full backswing or follow through properly.
Can I say one thing, Doctor?
Sure.
Just kind of look to what Ray is saying. What I experienced, like, in our Buffalo area, our golf is limited. And off-season like we are in today, I think it's important to really start developing a program for yourself, or if somebody else recommends, that you do daily exercises. Because going out in the spring, I think you can overdo it if you're not in condition and trying to do it so quick. But I think if that program, your work, you've gotten the soreness out of your muscles, you develop your muscles, and I think that's very important up here. Now, the people in Florida, they're constantly outside. They have a year-round season for golf.
Sure.
Up here, we're limited.
And we have to really do something to really keep ourselves and get ourselves in any kind of condition that we're looking forward to. Or you also have the indoor driving rings now.
Right.
Where the workouts, and then you can go out and hit balls, and you can kind of maintain it that way.
Do you find you have a flurry of injuries at the beginning of the golf season as opposed to in the middle or towards the end?
Yeah, I would say that it is does tend to follow a seasonal pattern.
So it's at the beginning. So, you know, softball season's upon us. This year I got through without major injuries myself, but at the beginning of each season, then you see it's those athletes that are anxious to get out there without proper preparation.
Yeah.
Let's talk about walking, jogging, hiking. What can you each tell us about that, and how can we best prepare to do that safely?
Well, there's certain imbalances that we commonly look for in people that run and walk quite a bit as well. And it boils down to certain muscles tending to be tight. And if I was going to give advice to somebody who runs or walks, the number one thing I would say is stretch out your calves. Right? You're going to start right from the ground up on a much better foundation that way. And you could imagine how if you have your feet and ankles squared away underneath you, that it's going to help everything else, knees, hips, lower back, up along the line.
So what's the best way to stretch out your calf muscle?
The most common way would be just to lean up against a solid surface, such as a wall or a countertop, and have one foot well behind you, maintain the heel on the floor, and then shift your body mass forward. You ought to feel a pretty darn good calf stretch in that leg.
Okay, and you have brochures for all of these things, and I'm sure you'd be happy to send them out to people who might have a question.
Sure.
And what's the phone number? Let's see. Your phone number is 568-1251.
Correct.
Is that correct? That's Buffalo Rehab Group. All right. Stretching out your calf muscles and walking.
Mm-hmm.
How about shoes? How important are proper shoes?
Yeah, we do make quite a bit of footwear recommendation for our patients. You know, I think that people are pretty savvy when it comes to that, and I think along the way that discomfort and pain has led them to their best shoe. Typically we're trying to get people, even if they're just into a small amount of walking, into a good athletic sneaker.
Now, diabetic patients have to take special care to watch their feet.
That's right.
Because they might not be able to feel what's going on.
Right.
Injuries or infections developing that could get much more serious.
Mm-hmm.
Bicycling. What about bicycling? Let's go back to the walking again. I want to comment on the posture issue again. And it seems like posture also would be extremely important in the hiking, jogging, walking situation. And are there any simple tips on how to maintain a proper posture for doing that, including how do you swing your arms and how important is arm swing when you're doing those activities?
We definitely try to get people that are into a walking program up to a certain pace. It seems like you could probably all imagine somebody jogging down the street who's just barely moving, and it really does not look healthy. It looks like they're just shuffling along, and it really isn't for the joints either. So the same goes with walking. If you walk too slowly, you're losing a lot of momentum and inertia. You're making your life a lot more difficult for yourself than it should be, and you're really putting your joints and muscles at a large disadvantage. So we try to get people up to sort of a critical speed for them, given their leg length and all of those things, with a good deal of arm swing. And that seems to really provide a drive to their walking so that they get more out of their exercise.
How much is fear of falling part of going too slowly in walking?
I think that has a lot to do with it. I always use the analogy of a coin on edge. And if you think of trying to roll a coin and keep it up on edge, you're not going to roll it slowly. You're going to roll it quickly. And moving with pace actually makes you safer. And it makes you better balanced than if you're moving too slowly.
That's a great analogy, John, except you need to know how to stop safely.
I just keep thinking
of when I'm on ice skates, and you know, when you get going, it's fine. You do feel pretty safe and steady, but it's you know, when the boards of the ice rink is approaching quickly, that's where the problem occurs.
That's a fine point.
So it's still, when you reach the end of the mall, there's always an end to somewhere. But is there any simple advice on keeping that pace, and then how do you stop safely?
I think more than anything, people just need to go about beginning their exercise with realistic expectations, meaning that, you know, you shouldn't go out and for the first time expect to walk 2 miles because you read in a magazine that that's correct. You know, you really just need to work with what you've got to begin with, and build small short-term goals for yourself to achieve, and then build off of those. So typically, you know, I'd be much happier having somebody walk 5 or 10 minutes at a good pace rather than walking half an hour but really struggling along.
Yeah, and strong muscles are going to help prevent falls. It helps your balance. It allows you to compensate when you feel tipsy. And you can only strengthen your muscles through exercise. There really isn't any other way to do it. Why don't we just touch on, before we get into swimming and a couple of other things, why don't we touch on the importance of nutrition, your exercising. Let's do those two things. Any recommendation? And Charlie, how about you as far as an athlete now and a former professional athlete, what kind of nutrition maintain for yourself?
Excellent question. From the days that I played to today's professional athlete, a tremendous change in the nutrition, the meals. One of the things I try to do is maintain a lot of fruit on a daily basis, and try to eat as much green vegetables as possible. And when I really get into a mode of want to take off weight, it's kind of the way I go, just eating the fibers, maybe cereal, hot and cold, and just cut back on large quantities of no breads. I usually do skim milk. I don't use the regular 2% of the regular milk, and those things seem to help me. And when I work out, I can really drop a few pounds at a rapid rate and exercising, but you have to exercise along with the diet that you're on.
Well, I think you're also saying that as we get older, our organs change.
Correct.
Heart, lungs, skin right. is more susceptible to tears because it's not as pliable as it used to be. All of our organ systems are changing. Our bones, we talked about osteoporosis right. a little bit, and nutrition can be a key to helping maintain all of those organ systems as strong as you mentioned. Cholesterol is going to affect your heart.
Right.
Smoking, if you're still smoking out there, you have to stop if you want to stay active and healthy, and especially if you want to do sports. You just have to do that. Any other tips that you give, Ray, on nutrition, any supplements, vitamins? I don't really feel there's any magic potion out there that if someone eats a well-balanced diet in moderation, that they're not gaining weight, that the diet provides the calories that they need to maintain a healthy weight. If they're exercising, then you're strengthening muscles and not just letting your nutrition turn into fat. Any other tips?
I think more than anything, especially in the older aged population, is that people hydrate properly. I think that we run across quite a bit of just muscle ache and pain and maybe a propensity for muscle spasm to occur, and that people don't bounce back from exercising as quickly, probably due to dehydration.
Mm-hmm.
So I talk to a lot of patients about that, just making sure that they're drinking enough water. I think that sleep deprivation is also a huge issue for people, especially people in pain. You know, that oftentimes cuts into their quality of sleep, and I think just from a mental standpoint that they're fatigued and that they're just sick of being in pain, and that in and of itself makes exercise difficult to want to do and to do. So
that sleep is an excellent point, and recent studies are coming out that people who don't sleep as much are the ones who tend to gain weight. So now we have a connection between sleep and weight problems. And in our society, young people, you know, we're pushing. This country, we're the country of doers and pushers, and I don't know how good that is overall, but it leads to other problems. And certainly if you're tired, you're not going to be able to function. You're not going to be your sharpest neurologically. We didn't even talk about the neurologic changes that occur with aging that affect your ability to play sports and to just engage in day-to-day activities. Swimming. We're coming to a close, but let's just talk about swimming a little bit. A lot of people enjoy swimming, and it provides very good exercise. And I know you have a pool at the therapy office. What do you have to say about swimming? And Charlie, you know, if you're involved with swimming, I'd like to hear about that too.
Yeah, I think in from professional experience, we get a lot of use out of the pool, especially in cases where we want to minimize joint stress. So that's your typical arthritic patient is going to really appreciate being in the pool where you can take away close to 70% of their body mass as they exercise. So it really provides an opportunity for people to get active who otherwise may be forced into a more sedentary activity or even style of therapy.
A quick one. We're going to shift to tennis very quickly, and this is for my parents who are active tennis players down in Florida. So, and they listen to my show when I get it up on the web, either at night or the next day. So, what do you have to say for tennis players? How can they stay the healthiest possible so they can continue playing into their 90s and hundreds and thereafter?
Yeah.
Do you play tennis, Charlie?
I attempted to play a few years back. And the golf, the game of golf really overshadowed tennis with me.
Okay.
I started, and then I found out to try to do both is tough.
Well, tennis, there's a lot of starting and stopping.
Right.
And
that's right.
You know, you're a big guy, and that would put a tremendous strain on knees and joints.
Well, at the time, I wasn't a big guy at the time.
Well, I'm talking about now. I mean, you're still a big guy. 6'5", I don't care how much you weigh, you're a big guy. Quick pointer. Players?
I would say that it has a lot of the same caveats as golf with all the rotation.
Right.
And then you're adding on all of the lunging and stopping and starting and awkward spinal movements with a serve and those types of things. So, I mean, to play tennis at a high level, you really need to be on a really comprehensive stretching program.
Yeah, and I think the average tennis player, and I know I have tended to do this, you don't try to be a hero.
Right.
You know, act your age when it comes to sports. Okay, we're going to have to wrap up. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks so much, Mr. Charlie Ferguson. That was wonderful. Mr. Ray Hamill for joining me today, and Scott for looking in. If you'd like to contact Ray at Buffalo Rehab about your sports injuries, the number there is 568-1251. Charlie, I don't know, with people see you around. If they see you, they can't miss you. So I don't know if you have any suggestions where people can call to get more information?
Well, they can contact me, 833-8422.
Okay.
Because I always have a lot of activities where I use my home phone, so
okay.
Well, feel free to give me a call.
Well, that's wonderful. We have two wonderful people here today. Next month, the first Monday of February, February 7th at 3 p.m., I'll have with me, and it was a nice segue that you brought up sleeping, Ray, specialist on sleep to talk about sleep problems and aging. This is Dr. Rob Stahl. I'll see you then.
The Station of the Nations, AM 1270, WHLD, Niagara Falls, Buffalo, New York, a Citadel Broadcasting communications station.
Sunday mornings go for